Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're jumping into something a lot of you are probably curious about. Cannabis potency. Specifically, does packing more THC into a product automatically mean you get, well, more high? It feels intuitive, doesn't it?
Mm.
Higher number equals stronger effect. We see it everywhere, 18% flower versus, say, 90% concentrate. But today, we're going to really dig into the science that complicates this, our mission. To see if there's actually a biological ceiling when you smoke, and, importantly, why edibles seem to play by totally different rules.
Exactly. That idea, you know, five times the THC should mean five times the high. It makes sense on paper. But our bodies are complex. The real puzzle here is figuring out why these huge potency differences don't always translate into equally huge differences in the actual experience. Where does the body hit the brakes? And, just as interesting, where does it seem to remove those brakes entirely?
Okay, let's start with smoking and vaping then, because that's where the ceiling idea really comes into play. There was this really interesting study back in 2020, University of Colorado Boulder, I think, published in JAMA Psychiatry. Yeah, that's the one. They basically set out to test this exact assumption. They got about 121 regular cannabis users, divided them up. One group smoked flower, some got 16% THC, others got stronger 24% THC stuff. And the second group?
The second group used concentrates. Yeah, much higher potency. We're talking 70% or even a massive 90% THC.
Okay, so big differences in the input THC. What did they measure? Just how high people felt?
Oh, much more than that. It was pretty thorough. They took blood samples, obviously, to check THC levels, but they also measured how intoxicated people reported feeling. And crucially, they did objective tests, too. Cognitive function tests, balance tests, right after using and then again an hour later. They wanted to see the real-world impact.
Right. Makes sense. You need the hard data, too. And what did they find? Did the 90% group just blow everyone else away?
Well, this is where it gets fascinating. And honestly, it kind of challenges a lot of the marketing you see. The blood tests. They showed exactly what you'd expect. The concentrate users, the 70% and 90% folks, had way higher THC levels in their plasma. Put more in, get more in the blood. Simple enough.
Okay. But. I sense a but coming.
A big but. When they looked at the actual effects, the self-reported high, the cognitive scores, the balance impairment there was surprisingly little difference between any of the groups.
Wait, really? So someone smoking 16% flower felt about as high and performed about the same on tests as someone dabbing 90% concentrate?
Broadly speaking, yes. The effects were remarkably similar, despite those huge differences in blood THC levels.
Wow. Okay, that is surprising. So you could have, what, five times more THC floating around in your system, but you don't feel five times higher? Or even noticeably more impaired. How does that work? How does the brain just cap the effect like that?
Yeah, it points to a biological speed limit. The researchers suggested a couple of reasons. The first one is pretty straightforward. Tolerance. These were all regular users. People who use often, especially potent stuff like concentrates, they naturally build up a tolerance. Their baseline is just different.
Okay, tolerance makes sense. But wouldn't the 90% still hit harder than 16%, even with tolerance? I mean, it's still delivering a much bigger potential dose, right?
That's a great point. And it leads to the second, probably more significant mechanism, something called receptor saturation.
Receptor saturation. Okay, tell me more.
So THC works by binding to specific receptors in your brain, mainly the CB1 receptors. Think of them like little docking stations or parking spots for THC molecules.
Gotcha, like a lock and key.
Exactly like a lock and key. Now, when you smoke or vape, that THC hits your lungs, gets into your blood, and rushes to the brain really fast. But the theory is there are only so many of these CB1 parking spots. Once most of those spots are filled up, once the receptors are saturated, any extra THC molecules arriving just don't have anywhere to dock. They can't exert much additional psychoactive effect.
I see. So it's like trying to pour more water into a glass that's already full to the brim.
That's a perfect analogy. Once those receptors are occupied, using a super high 90% concentrate doesn't necessarily make you feel significantly higher than using a strong flower, because the brain's machinery is already running at full capacity. The functional effect hits a ceiling.
So for smoking, vaping, dabbing, the takeaway seems to be that chasing ridiculously high THC numbers might not actually deliver a proportionally stronger high, especially for people who use regularly. There's a biological wall.
That's what this study strongly suggests, yes. The subjective peak high seems capped for regular users of inhaled products. Now, the researchers were careful to point out, and this is important, these were regular users.
Right.
These findings might not apply to someone brand new to cannabis. An inexperienced user with no tolerance could have a very different, potentially overwhelming reaction to high potency products because they'll hit that saturation point much faster and maybe more intensely. Caution is still absolutely key for them.
Okay, that makes sense. But, all right, this is the part I'm really stuck on. If smoking has this biological ceiling because of receptor saturation,
right,
then how do we explain edibles? We all hear the stories, right? People taking an edible and having experiences way, way more intense and sometimes really unpleasant compared to smoking. If the brain has a limit, why do edibles seem to blow right past it?
Oh, yes. Edibles are a whole different beast. The difference is huge, and it completely bypasses that lung-to-brain receptor saturation issue. It all comes down to how your body processes it. Think about the routes. Smoking. THC goes into lungs, bam, straight into the bloodstream. Quick delivery to the brain. Bioavailability is maybe, what, 10-35%? Effects are fast. You feel it in minutes.
Right. Very direct.
Edibles, though, they go through your stomach, your intestines, the whole digestive system. Absorption is much slower. Bioavailability is generally lower, maybe 4-20%. But the crucial step happens before the THC even really gets into your main circulation. It has to go through the liver first.
The liver. Okay, what does the liver do to it?
The liver performs what's called first-pass metabolism. It's basically the body's processing plant. And when it processes delta-9 THC, the main stuff in the plant, it chemically changes it. It converts a significant portion into a different molecule altogether.
It changes the THC. Into what?
To something called 11-hydroxy-THC, and this is the game changer for edibles.
11-hydroxy-THC, never heard of it. Is it stronger?
Much stronger. It's considered significantly more potent than regular delta-9 THC. Not only that, it's also better at crossing the blood-brain barrier, that protective layer around your brain.
Whoa.
So the result is a high that feels different, often described as more intense, more body-focused, maybe even more psychedelic, and it lasts much, much longer. Because it's driven by this supercharged metabolite created by your own liver.
Okay, that explains why the type of high feels different. But what about the ceiling? If brain receptors get saturated with smoked THC, what stops this 11-hydroxy-THC? Is there a limit there?
And that is the critical point, and honestly, where the danger lies with edibles. There doesn't seem to be the same kind of rapid saturation limit for the effects of 11-hydroxy-THC produced via digestion.
No limit.
Well, not in the same immediate way as receptor saturation from inhalation. Basically, the amount of 11-hydroxy-THC your liver produces is largely dependent on how much delta-9 THC you eat. You eat more THC, your liver keeps working, converting it into more 11-hydroxy-THC. There isn't that quick feedback loop or bottleneck at the brain receptor level telling your body, okay, that's enough. The conversion process in the liver just keeps going based on the dose ingested.
So the ceiling is effectively removed. You're not limited by brain receptors hitting capacity quickly, but more by how much you actually ate and how much your liver can process over time.
Precisely. You've bypassed the initial bottleneck.
Okay, wow. So what does that mean practically? Why does this difference lead to so many more reports of people getting way too high, uncomfortably high, with edibles compared to smoking?
It really comes down to a couple factors that combine badly because there's no ceiling. First, the delay. It's infamous, right? Edibles can take anywhere from 30 minutes to sometimes even 2 hours or more to fully kick in.
Yeah, the classic mistake. You eat a gummy, wait an hour, feel nothing.
And you think, oh, this is weak, and eat another one, or maybe even a third. Then suddenly the first dose hits and the second dose hits, all being converted into that potent 11-hydroxy-THC. You're slammed with way more effect than you anticipated because you couldn't titrate the dose based on immediate feeling.
You lose that puff-by-puff control you have with smoking.
Exactly. That leads to the second factor, unpredictable dosage relative to effect. A standard dose in a legal market might be 10 milligrams, with 2.5 milligrams or 5 milligrams suggested for beginners, but some edibles contain 50 milligrams, 100 milligrams, or even more. Combine that huge potential dose with the delay and the lack of an immediate ceiling. It's a recipe for accidentally consuming far too much.
And because there's no natural break like receptor saturation, taking too much can lead to some really serious unpleasant side effects, right? Yeah. We're not talking lethal overdose, but severe intoxication.
Correct. The potential consequences are significant precisely because you've bypassed the body's usual checks and balances. When people massively overshoot their tolerance with edibles, they can experience things like intense anxiety, paranoia, sometimes even temporary psychosis-like symptoms, severe nausea, vomiting. It's an overwhelming experience fueled by that unrestrained 11-hydroxy-THC pathway.
That really paints a clear picture. The intensity isn't just about the number on the package. It's fundamentally about how and where your body processes the THC, it activates totally different mechanisms.
Absolutely. If your goal is a quick onset, controllable high, smoking or vaping seems to hit that biological ceiling relatively fast due to receptor saturation, especially for regular users. But predictable, in a way. But if you're consuming an edible, you're engaging the liver, creating 11-hydroxy-THC, and entering a realm where the intensity is less capped by brain receptors and more by the dose consumed over time requires much more patience and caution.
So we've seen compelling evidence, like that Jamis study, suggesting that for inhaled cannabis, especially for regular users, the brain's receptors can get saturated. This makes ultra-high potency products, like 90% concentrates, potentially not much more intoxicating in practice than strong flower. Which leaves us with a final thought for you, our listener, to consider. Given this science, does it suggest that the huge industry focus on pushing THC percentages higher and higher for flower and concentrates might be driven more by marketing and the perception of strength, rather than by delivering a measurably stronger psychoactive effect for the average consumer? Something to think about next time you're looking at those labels.